reading today is to be found in the 16th chapter of the Gospel of Luke concerning the rich man and Lazarus the beggar. There was a certain rich man who likewise was clothed in purple and with fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. We have here mention made of a man who was wealthy. He had a beautiful home, he had servants, he had much money probably, and he lived according to what he had. So this man, he had a beautiful table. Every day he had different varieties of food on the table, and he invited many people to come to his table to eat, and he fared very sumptuously every day. He was not afraid to spend his money. There was no lack of it by him. And therefore, he put on a great splash, we would say, whenever he had a feast or whenever he had invited guests to come. This man, likewise, was a man that did not seem to care much about giving away some of the riches that he had. We find that there was laid at his gate a poor man called Lazarus, who was full of sores and desired to be fed from the crumbs that fell from the table of this rich man, and the dogs, they licked his sores. It's not a sin to be rich. This man being rich and being clothed the way he was and doing as he did, there was nothing wrong in that as long as God had blessed him with these riches and used them so that he had a blessing of it and others did too. But his sin was that he had nothing over for the poor, it seems. It doesn't say that he didn't give him anything. It doesn't say that he abused him and told him he couldn't lay at his feet. No. And it doesn't say either that this man, when he had these feasts, and when he lived the way he did, that he drank and that he got others drunk. No, it doesn't say anything of the kind. It just says that he was a rich man. So it's not a sin to be rich, but it's a sin if we do not use the blessings that God has given unto us and use them to his honor. It's written in the precious scriptures that those that are cast into hell, well, one of the reasons why was, I was hungry and thou gave me nothing to eat. This is what this man was guilty of. He had then a poor man by the name of Lazarus laid at his gate. Daily this man was brought to the gate of this rich man. He was full of sores. He couldn't walk. He couldn't bring himself there. He had to have somebody carry him there and lay him there. Probably he was laid at other men's gates too, other people that were wealthy. This is the way that he lived. He had no other livelihood. So this poor man was in a sorry state and condition in being covered with sores. It's bad enough when we're afflicted and we're sick and we need people to pay attention to us, but it's worse yet if we have a lot of sores all over our body, and they're very painful. And sores, of course, are ugly to look at. He was something like Job. Job was covered with sores, too. And so this man lay in this condition. And this rich man, he had probably a kennel of dogs, which he kept for fancy, and he fed these dogs, and the dogs came and they licked the sores of this Lazarus. Some think that he left the dogs loose so that they would guard him and that would chase him away. But I don't think that this is the case. I think the dogs were more kinder than the man himself because they came and they licked this poor Lazarus' sores. Probably it mollified them, it eased them somewhat. So this poor man, Lazarus, he was an heir of heaven, and he laid at the gate of an heir of hell. And now, if we were to judge humanly we would say, well, this rich man, he must be a friend of God. Look at the way God blessed him. Look at the way God gives him everything. There's this other man laying at his gate. He don't seem to be a friend of God. He seems to be punished. He must have done something wrong that he's afflicted the way he is. Humanly speaking, this is the way we judge matters. The Jews judge this way too, according to the church. The church, of course, if it had a lot of wealthy people attending it, and it was prosperous, and a lot of people also came to the church, they considered this the blessing of God. But if a person was poor and had nothing, they wouldn't even as much as look at such a person. And now Christ in this parable, he teaches us entirely different. We are not to judge by the wealth, by what people have and what they don't have, according to their spiritual state. No, this man Lazarus, he was a child of God. And now for me and you to understand this is pretty difficult. For you read in Psalm 37, David says that he had never seen the seed of the righteous begging bread. Here we have an heir of heaven laying at the gate of a rich man, covered with sores, waiting to be fed with the crumbs which fell from this rich man's table. Oh, my dear hearers, it pleases God many times in life to heap affliction after affliction upon some of his dear people. The reason he does that is that he knows what their sins are, what their weaknesses are, and to prohibit them from falling into these sins, he afflicts them sometimes very sorely. Now you look at Job, how he was afflicted by the devil. God permitted this to take place. And this man, he even cursed the day that he was born. But we don't read of this man, Lazarus, that he spake against the rich man. It doesn't seem that he even cried aloud or tried to get the rich man's attention. He just lay there. He seemed to be contented with the way God was dealing with him. What a blessing, my hearers, to be contented, whether we be poor, whether we be afflicted, or what we have to go through in life, to say, Lord, what you do with me is just, is righteous. And this man was not only poor naturally, but he was also spiritually poor. He was a beggar, and as he had the grace of God in his soul, he also was a spiritual beggar. For this brings with it that we will be praying at the throne of grace for spiritual food, hungry and thirsty for the words of God, the words of life. And now we read that this beggar, he died, and he was carried into Abraham's bosom by angels. A convoy of angels took his soul into heaven above. What a blessing this was for this man. In all the misery and all the pain that he was going through and all that he had to pass through, the Lord took him away. He took him home to heaven. The Lord does this many times. He takes his people out of this world and he leaves the wicked to flourish for quite a while. Oh, what a mercy if we happen to die and be a child of God. Angels are ministering spirits unto those that are heirs of salvation. So here we have angels coming and taking the soul of this beggar, this Lazarus, into heaven above. Oh, my dear hearers, this is a solemn subject we have to speak about this afternoon. This teaches us likewise, this beggar, he died. And the next thing we read is, and the rich man died also, and was buried. And the next thing we read about him is, when he opened his eyes in hell, he saw Abraham and Lazarus in his bosom. Oh, my dear hearers, this teaches us that there are two places where you and I are either going to go to. We are either going to go to heaven or go to hell. And any person that's been born and brought up under this truth and has read this Bible and believes that this is the Word of God and can read this chapter without any concern, without any thought about where he or she is going to spend eternity, is in a very sad case. Oh, when we read this, we are assured that there is a place called heaven and a place called hell. For this beggar, he went to heaven to be with God. And this man, this rich man, when he died, his soul was immediately cast into hell. And he was in torment immediately. This teaches us that there are two separate states after death. And that one is to be in glory, and the other one is to be in torment. The Jews, they had three places that they believed the righteous went to when they died. The first was that they went to the throne of God. The second was that they went to the Garden of Eden. And the third place was that they went into Abraham's bosom. Christ uses this last point for this parable because the Jews, they believed that they were Abraham's seed, and they classified themselves as the only people that were going to go to heaven. And now Jesus, he rectifies this mistake because he begins to speak about this rich man who likewise was a Jew, and he was cast into hell. By this, Christ teaches us that though a person may be rich, may have much, and may live a good and a moral life, a consistent life, that still, when they die, if they are not born again, if they have not the grace of God in their soul, they are cast into hell immediately. The soul is immediately brought into hell, just as immediately the soul of Lazarus was taken up into glory to be with God. Now, this is a terrible thing, my dear hearers, for each and every one of us, where we, by nature, are born in sin, conceived in iniquity, and where we are on the broad road to destruction. Or whether we are rich or whether we are poor, whether we are young or whether we are old, we must die. The beggar died and the rich man died. Death does not ask whether we be rich or whether we be poor. It does not say unto us, well, you're young yet, you can live a while, or you're old. No, death is a great enemy. It has swept millions and millions of people off this earth into eternity, and it will soon be your and my time. We know not. It may be this very day yet. How soon does death come to many people, unexpectedly, swiftly, and death strikes. And oh, may I ask you a question? Should that take place with you, where will your soul be? Either in hell or either in heaven? Have you thought of that, my hearers? What a blessing that you're still alive, that you're still under the means of grace, and that the Bible teaches us very plainly, very clearly, that God has no delight in the death of any one of us, none of us, no. But therein that we turn and live. He prays unto us, turn ye, for wherefore will ye die? I have no delight in the death of the wicked, he says. And now, if you may fall under this scripture, which I wish you would do, my dear hearers, because we are wicked creatures. Fall down on your knees and tell God, here I am, a wicked creature, and you say you have no delight in my death, Lord. Won't you save me? Won't you deliver me from my sin? Oh, let me entreat you from the very bottom of my heart to do this, my dear Hebrew. Take his word and speak to him with his own word and ask him to turn you yet from your evil and sinful ways and bring you upon that way which leadeth to where Lazarus went. Oh, what a vast difference to have a convoy of angels taking our soul to heaven rather than hear God say unto us, go away from me. I have never known you. You were cursed. We will either hear this or we will have what Lazarus had. Think of it, my dear. Is this a serious matter? I can't bring the seriousness of this subject to your heart. We are mostly indifferent. We are careless. We've probably heard this all our life long. It never affected us. But oh, I wish it would, my hearers. And now we find that this rich man, when he opened his eyes, he was in torment. What sort of torment was that? Soul torment. He had the eyes of his understanding of his mind open. This proves to us that though the body dies and goes into the grave, the soul does not die. The soul remains alive. The soul knows what it is doing, what it is experiencing. So this is what Christ is teaching us here in this parable of this rich man. For when he came into this place, immediately he was in torment. And when he came there, he immediately seen Abraham and Lazarus in his bosom. Now Abraham, we may typify him as being Christ in heaven. He speaks as Christ does to this rich man. And this Lazarus being very near and very dear to Jesus in glory above. It proves that this Lazarus was an eminent believer because he received such a position so close to God in heaven. And this rich man, when he seen this, this made his torment that much the worse to think that that beggar that laid at his feet was in such a glorious place, and he, why, he had nothing else but devils round about him. The sight that he had in the place where he was terrible. Every sight in hell is painful. And now this man, his soul immediately experienced the wrath of God in it. And the wrath of God coming into his soul brought him into such a condition that he spake unto Abraham and said that he would like Abraham to send Lazarus to him that he may touch the tip of his finger in water and put it upon my tongue, for I am in torment and in this flame. The flame of God's wrath, what a fire that is. Any of you, my hearers, have been burned in light. You know it's an awful thing to be burned. It's very painful. And now God gives hell an emblem of fire, of pain, of suffering. And this is what this rich man was experiencing. He saw Lazarus, that good man that lay at the gate, by him in glory. And he, in an awful condition, terrible condition, and now he was so convinced that he could never deliver himself out of this condition. But he desired to be relieved. If it only was but a drop of water that Lazarus would bring to him and put upon his tongue. All this tongue that he had then was in awful torment. tongue that he had used probably to curse, to blaspheme God, to speak many words, inconsistent, hard-hearted words, and probably filthy language he used too. All this tongue was an organ of speech, but it also was an organ of taste. He remembered how good he had it when he was upon earth, the many good things he had to eat, and now he needed a drop of water to cool his tongue, and he desired that Abraham would send Lazarus to him for this. Oh, who can express the torment that this man was going through in this awful place? Oh, he did not even receive one drop of water to cool his tongue. Abraham answered him and said unto him, remember, he says unto him, that thou hast thy good things in life, and Lazarus his evil things. And now Lazarus is comforted, but thou art tormented. This brings us to mind this word, remember. Oh, what an awful thing it'll be to be in hell, and then to have our memories lead us back to our former life. He remembered Lazarus. He knew him. He had laid at his feet. He probably had given him crumbs and something to eat at times. And he thought, well, Abraham, if you send him to me, he'll be willing to come to me. He'll remember the favors that I did to him. But Abraham, he had to tell him that this could not take place, because there had been a great gulf fixed so that nobody that was in heaven could go to that place of torment, and neither could anybody that was in this torment go up to heaven. God had fixed this gulf. This was by his decree, by his counsel, and by an everlasting sentence placed upon this man, this rich man. This rich man desired relief. He desired to be relieved, even if it were a moment, from the pain that he was suffering on his tongue. And Abraham denied him even this. This teaches us that it's an everlasting state of pain and of torment into which every person that dies in his sin will be cast. Oh, think of this, my dear hearers. What an awful eternity it'll be to have God cast you into such a place, and never, never, never will be an end to it, and never will be there a lessening of the pain and the suffering that you and I will undergo as we hear that fearful denunciation, go away from me, I have never known you. Oh, I could not entreat you enough to fall down before this great God and to seek an interest in his dear son Jesus, who bore this wrath, this torment in his body on the tree, and that for sinning. Oh, one look upon this precious Jesus by faith. Oh, what a wonder this is, my hearers, that there is a way of escape, that there is pardon, peace, and reconciliation to be found with God in his dear son Jesus. Oh, may you be given the seek of interest in him while it is yet called today, for you know not what tomorrow may bring. Oh, eternity, that word, there is no end to it. An eternity of bliss or an eternity of woe lies before the door of each and every one of us. And now Abraham, he is speaking in the place of Christ, and this man, he is praying to Abraham out of this place of torment. That's odd, isn't it? So that even in hell, this man offered up prayer to Abraham. We don't think that there will be such a discourse, such a communication between those that are in heaven and between those that are in hell. So this is just a description of the way that persons who die, either in the Lord or in their sins, will experience in their souls. So this praying to a saint that died and that was in glory, as this rich man did to Abraham, is something that the Catholic Church believes and advocates. It's an idolatry. There's no truth whatsoever in it. They may base it upon this, that this man did pray there, but he got no answer. He got no help. He got no relief. Therefore, this is but a description of how it is after we pass away. And now, where he got no relief, where he was told that Lazarus could not come to him and give him any relief, he continues to pray. And he says, Father Abraham, send him then to my father's house. For I have five brothers, he says, that they come not into this place of torment. Let him testify to them. You didn't give me no answer to my first prayer. You told me I couldn't come to you and you couldn't come to me, but please send Lazarus to my father's house and let him witness before my brothers about the awful torment that I am in, that they may not come there. He had then a feeling concern even about his brethren that were still alive. He desired that they would not come into this place where he was. They probably lived in the same house with him. He probably was not married. He didn't have any children, or he sure would have mentioned them first. But he pressed upon Abraham that his five brothers were in that same state that he was in when he died. And therefore he would like Abraham to send Lazarus to his brethren. He thought by this that surely if one arises from the dead and goes to those and tells them what an awful place it is and what pain he was suffering, this would make an impression upon them. This would cause them to repent. This would cause them to seek an interest in God while they were yet upon earth. But these are the thoughts that this man had yet even in hell. All my hearers, in all probability, he was one that even helped his brothers live the way they were doing, because he had money and he had wealth. And naturally, they lived with him, and this is the way they all lived. This came home to him. He began to remember this too. Oh, my hearers, when this memory and our conscience are opened up in hell, oh, what an awful eternity that'll be. When we remember in hell, when it's too late, we can't do anything about it. When we remember the good things that God gave to us, the same as this rich man had providentially, and we remember the warnings, the admonitions, the pleadings that came to us under the means of grace to flee from the wrath to come, and we did not listen. We paid no attention to it. We ignored it. Oh, what an awful thing this will be when your conscience goes open and you have to admit, my own fault. It's my own fault. I never listened. I never paid any attention. I never gave heed to the word that came to me. I never put it to the test. to see if what was spoken to me was true. Oh, my hearers, when the memory of a person likewise is opened up to the various sins that he has lived in and committed, one says that the damned in hell, when they have their conscience open and their memory open, and they have committed a murder, oh, they're raving, praying that God would forgive them for that sin that they had committed in murdering somebody. But there's no forgiveness. There's no answer. And this is the torment that person is